back in the 1970s, we had a period of budget austerity, and the government cut back on military pay raises. They proposed changing the military retirement system. They cut back on health care spending, and we ended up causing a retention problem, and then we had to go back and fix all those things.
And in some and even in some cases, had to increase them bigger than they were before.
That's right. And yeah. Because they cause people to get out of service, you forget that you can't replace someone with 10 years of experience. You can't replace a 10-year pilot. So it takes 10 years to do that. You have to go out and recruit three or four people, put them through training, and hope that one of them stays for 10 years in order to replace that person.
In some sense, there's this debate going on there, out there whether feds are fairly paid. Are they paid even more than the private sector? And at least in my view, I always look at where people vote best with their feet, and so they're not heading to government jobs in throngs. And yet there still seems to be that debate that goes on.
Well, there is. I have to say I'm not that much of an expert on the federal civilians, but we certainly have that debate with the military.
Yeah.
And we periodically go through those cycles. Like I said, I mentioned the 70s. We had a big catch-up raise in the early 1980s, and then immediately for the next two decades, capped military pay below private sector pay growth, to the point where we caused another retention problem in the late 90s. And Congress over the last decade has gradually plussed the military back up, and we've almost closed the comparability gap, but now people are talking again about overpaid military, and they forget, you know, that the whole idea of pay comparability is to prevent losses, and the reasons, you know, one of the big things we have to contend with is people who want to talk about how much military spending on people has increased since the year 2000, for example. And we have to keep making the point that, wait a minute, 2000 would be a terrible benchmark. That was the point at which, you know, we had reduced military retirement by 25%. We were kicking military retirees out of military health coverage. Military pay was 14% below private sector pay growth. And we were having big retention problems.
Yeah.
So there's a reason that we plussed up the pay to fix the problems that were in existence at the time. But now, you know, once the problems start getting fixed, everybody starts to want to look at the budget again and forget about, you know, what the implications are.
Now, Secretary Gates and the Obama administration have specifically asked Congress not to increase military pay because they at least feel, for whatever reason, they feel like it's comparable enough. Is that part of what we're talking about here, or is it something beyond that?
I think it is. Yes. And that's the point at which, you know, from by our calculations, military pay is still 2.4% away from comparability. We've been tracking this ever since 1982.
How do you measure that? It seems, I mean, I know federal pay overall, it oftentimes can be difficult to do this apples-to-apples comparison.
Exactly. We think the easiest thing to do is just compare the military basic pay raise to private sector pay growth.
Hmm.
The government has an index for private sector pay growth. It's called the Employment Cost Index. It's out there. The government uses it for everything else. We think they ought to use it for military pay raises, too.
And is there, I mean, part of what I remember back in the Clinton years, when was the last period of time when there was a reduction in government employment.
Right.
And a lot of folks that we ended up getting rid of were a lot of the procurement specialists. And that is knowledge that's now gone. And in a way, we paid for it over the long term. Any concern that that's what happened? I mean, I hear you saying that we've done that again over, we seem not to learn from history.
Well, I think that, unfortunately, that is the experience that, you know, and I think part of it is Pentagon leadership changes, administration, people in the administration change, people in Congress change, and everybody thinks it's a new era. Those of us who have had to fight these battles before see the same arguments coming up again and again.
We sort of recycle them a little bit.
Exactly. And you know, you don't like to be things do change, but the point that we keep making is the conditions of military service don't change, And when you look at World War II, or you look at Korea, or you, and you look at today's sacrifices that the troops are making, everybody wants to talk about it being a new day. But we're deploying people more than we have since World War II.
Yeah. The argument, part of the argument on the other side is that the benefits packages, and particularly the health benefits that are out there, almost DOD, I think all organizations are having trouble paying for these, but sure. DOD particularly having trouble paying for the amount of healthcare and the growth in healthcare costs. Is that part of this argument?
That is one of the Department of Defense's big arguments. And there again, they want to compare current costs. They cite growth since 2000. Well, in the year 2000, because of downsizing of military hospitals and clinics, and because of budget tightening, the military had basically disenfranchised military retirees over 65. They were turned out of military health care and put on Medicare just as if they'd never served a day. And we made a big point at that time that that wasn't right, that DOD had an employer's responsibility to those folks. And Congress agreed and passed a TRICARE supplement to Medicare for those folks. And, you know, now the Department of Defense is acting like they were surprised that people over 65 incur health care costs. You know, to us, that was very predictable. Congress and DOD knew it at the time that it was going to be expensive. They lauded it at the time, but now they don't want to pay the price.
And part of what I hear you saying, and when I was reading your piece, is, hold on, these are people who have sacrificed a lot in terms of putting their lives on the lines, and particularly in the last couple of years, where our volunteer force has been really stretched in many ways, almost to the breaking point in some ways.
Exactly, Chris. People, you know, most Americans have gone about their lives over the last decade. And the only way we know we're at war is by reading the newspapers and reading the sacrifices of the people who have been deployed again and again and again for almost 10 years now. And the point that we make is, when you talk to military people who serve a career, invariably they talk about why, when they're asked why they put up with these sacrifices, it's because their service leaders told them, if you endure these conditions for at least 20 or 30 years, then we'll provide you this package of benefits that is above what you could get in civilian life. And it's a very powerful incentive. And in essence, what the service leaders are saying when you think about that is they're saying that your service and your sacrifice is your premium. We require you to pay it, to prepay it upfront for at least 20 or 30 years. And the problem that military people encounter is once they complete it, and then DOD wants to jack up their fees by doubling or tripling them, it's as if they're saying, well, your service really isn't of value anymore. All that really counts is how much you pay compared to civilians pay. And that is a pretty emotional issue, as you can imagine, for military folks who feel like they've upheld their part of the bargain and now the government's changing the rules.
And part of what, and it seems like that's going along a lot now with state and locals, and they made these deals because they didn't want to have to pay people salary increases, and now when it comes time to pay for them, all of a sudden they're looking to change the rules, and part of that seems a little unfair, at least to me. But also what I hear folks saying is, hold on, we have to spread the sacrifice across the board. Nobody is free from sacrifice.
And there's a certain there's some truth to that. And one of the things that we always say is that's what military service is all about. We understand sacrifice for the common good. The place we have a problem is when people want to say, wait a minute, now you got to pay up like everybody else. And in essence, ignoring that the military community has borne 100% of the wartime sacrifice over the last 10 years, when the advice to the civilian community was, how can you help the war effort go shopping? And so to us, there again, it is recognizing the fair share of the sacrifice has to account for the sacrifice rendered in kind through service, not just monetary.